This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, September the 6th, 2013. Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, and we'll be reading for you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending September the 6th, 2013. Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn are our editors this week. I'm your presenter for today, Ros Lydiard, and your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
Now we start as usual with What's On. On Thursday, September the 12th at 7:30, the Winchester Discovery Centre will be hosting a Meet the Author event. This time it'll be Frances Osborne who'll talk about her novel Park Lane. It's a classic story about the suffragette movement. Tickets are £5 and can be booked at the box office on 01962 873 602. That number again, 01962 873 602. The David Norris Owen Trio will be performing at St Peter's Church, Stockbridge, on Saturday, October the 5th at 7:30. They will be giving a concert which includes Beethoven's beautiful Moonlight Sonata and works by Bennett, Elgar and Mendelssohn. Tickets are £12 and they can be obtained from the Andover Lights box office. That telephone number is 01 264 368 368. 01 264 368 368. And we can give you very good advance notice of a production by the Winchester Operatic Society. It's Oh, What a Lovely War, and the opening night will coincide with Armistice Day 2014. November the 11th, of course. And the tickets will go on sale in June 2014. That's a long way ahead, but you could put a note in your book. And we will keep you informed about that event. And one other What's On, which is a rather unusual one, but we're coming up now to seasonal flu clinics. And one enterprising surgery has advertised that it is time to get your appointments booked if you qualify, if you're over 65, if you have a heart disease or you're diabetic. That's the time to get to your surgery and say, I'd like an appointment, please. Right, on to lighting up time for the week ending Friday the 6th of September, when the sun came up at 6:27 a.m. and lighting up began at 7:43 p.m. And on Wednesday, 11th of September, the sun will come up at 6:35 a.m. and the lighting up will be 7:29 p.m. As usual, we'll say to you, if you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, then please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And of course you know that if you want to skip any particular item on this recording, all you do is press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player just to move on to another track. Now the main headlines this week are Town ready for complete revamping costing millions, Trust's 4.6 million redundancy payments, City unveils plan to revamp the station area. And Claire has the first headline story, please.
Town ready for complete revamp costing millions. Civic hub, public meeting square and street furniture all planned. A Hampshire town centre is in line for a new square as part of its multi-million pound facelift. Eastleigh Borough Council is creating a new civic hub for itself at Eastleigh House, which could cost up to £7 million. Now the council has announced plans to create a new square for events and performances at Wells Place. A further £180,000 will be spent revamping the central area's street furniture. The council plans to invest in 184 new items of bright stainless steel for the town centre, which will include seats, benches, bollards, bins and cycle racks. Civic chiefs want a coordinated scheme throughout the town in High Street, Market Street, Wells Place, Lee Road Precinct and Market Place. Installation should start during September and finish in November, though a time frame has yet to be set for the town square proposal. Those behind it say it is designed to help reduce street clutter by grouping new elements together, making them easier to clean and maintain. Street furniture was chosen and funded by the Eastleigh Local Area Committee. This scheme is part of a wider programme of improvements to the town centre, which include improved visitor information signs, improved signage for Mitchell Road car park, new lamp columns that can take banners to promote the town, and refurbishing the railway station forecourt. The new borough council headquarters, which include extensive refurbishment and a revamp of the neighbouring Wessex House business centre and the creation of a landmark glass box, should be ready for staff to move into from their current site in Lee Road by March next year. Chair of Eastleigh LAC, Councillor Paul Bicknell, said, "Eastleigh is a great place to live, and this is an exciting time for the town centre and Eastleigh town as a whole, with a number of new schemes. The new street furniture will help to improve the experience of visitors to the town and help to strengthen the town's identity by providing an eye-catching and coordinated design." He said investment in regeneration was a key priority for the Eastleigh Area Committee. "We have an ongoing commitment to invest in the town to provide a high-quality environment for shoppers and visitors to enjoy and where local businesses can prosper now and in the future."
Trust's £4.6 million redundancy payments, 14 golden goodbyes topped £100,000. A Hampshire Hospital Trust has spent £4.6 million on redundancy payouts since a merger, but more skilled staff are needed in key areas. Some 92 staff and managers have received exit packages since the 2011 acquisition of Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, WEHCT, which ran the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Andover War Memorial Hospital, by Basingstoke Hospital Trust. Figures from the latest annual report show the average payout was £50,173, more than double what most UK workers get. Since January 2012, 14 senior managers received six-figure golden goodbyes, topping £100,000, with the best-paid individual walking away with between £150,000 and £200,000. NHS workers, are entitled to a month's pay for every full year of service when they are made redundant, up to a maximum of 2 years' salary. Most of the WEHCT Board of Directors were on temporary contracts and not entitled to exit packages, including Acting Chief Executive Dr. Chris Gordon, still employed by the Trust as a medical consultant. Others took up new posts elsewhere in the NHS, including Alex Whitfield, Chief Operating Officer, who is now employed by Solent NHS Trust, a large community and mental health trust. trust chiefs say only one director received an exit package, but refused to name the individual. Redundancy payments can only be reclaimed if the employee rejoined the NHS within 4 weeks of leaving. Meanwhile, separate statistics indicate the merged trust, which runs hospitals in Winchester, Basingstoke and Andover, had 200 unfilled vacancies in April 2013, including 93 nurses. 6 months ago, an inspection of the RHCH revealed it was short-staffed. Inspectors from the Care Quality Commission said there were not always enough qualified and skilled staff to meet patients' needs. The £4.6 million spent on redundancy pay would have hired some 164 nurses on average pay of £28,000. Lindsay Meeks, regional officer for the Royal College of Nursing, said, "There have been a huge number of vacancies and redundancy money could have been used to employ staff. But a restructure was required because there was duplication of a number of manager roles. It will be cheaper in the long run to go through the redundancy process." She said, "Low staff morale and a clash of different cultures at Winchester and Basingstoke had led to qualified nurses leaving the trust. The merger rattled a lot of cages, and people have been feeling very unsettled. Winchester, in particular, has had a problem." But she said the trust was working with the RCN on a leadership and development programme for ward sisters to improve stability. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust said the merger had reduced duplication in administrative areas and savings had allowed it to develop clinical services, including a new outpatients department at the RHCH, a new CT digital scanner, and refurbished X-ray facility at Basingstoke and North Hants Hospital, and a mobile chemotherapy and MRI unit in Andover. A spokesman said, "We have over 5,000 staff, and due to normal turnover, as well as national challenges in recruiting, we have some vacancies. However, we are actively recruiting to all posts and place a particular emphasis on clinical frontline roles, as this is our priority."
City unveils plan to revamp station area. The first steps are being taken in what could eventually be a multi-million pound revamp of the Winchester railway station area. The City Council has appointed consultants, Tibbalds, to draw up a preliminary assessment that establishes land values and suggests ideas and improvements. The exercise will again put the spotlight on the Cattle Market car park off Andover Road. Ideas suggested over the last 12 months have included new offices to attract a nationally known firm to set up headquarters in the city, housing, and a new theatre. David Ash, director of Winchester Architects CH Design Partnership in Hyde Street, has been pushing for a coordinated approach that will enhance the city. Mr. Ash says, "A slightly drab area with car parks and underused spaces could be transformed into a gateway to the city." He hopes major landowners, mainly the councils and Network Rail, can work together to improve the area and prevent long-term blight. Tibbalts have held meetings with interested parties, including WCC leader Keith Wood, council planners, City of Winchester Trust, WINAC and Winchester BID. The study area stretches from Upper High Street to Stockbridge Road to the Cattle Market off Andover Road. Mr. Ash said, "We are pleased with the way things are going. The first steps are encouraging." He said he hoped the City Council would not consider selling the Cattle Market car park, which has long been eyed by developers. "I hope they don't hold a fire sale and dispose of it quickly, They'll get more in the long run if there is a credible vision in place for the whole area, which will encourage developers. Mr. Ash said it was important that the City Council maintains a coordinating role. Engaging with the public will also be vital. Steve Tilbury, Corporate Director at the City Council, said, "The Council is not proposing any sale at all, let alone a fire sale." Mr. Tilbury added that a report on parking strategy, due out for the Cabinet meeting on September the 11th, would look at future use of council car parks. Gladstone Street and the Cattle Market are both inside the study area. "We want parking that serves the appropriate use in the right places. The Cattle Market is not much used by shoppers, but quite well by people who work at Denplan. We feel it is not punching its weight. You come down Andover Road, there's an opportunity there." He said the overall aim was to provide a vision and give clarity to landowners. "We are not going to take control, as with Silver Hill."
And those were the headline stories. Thank you all. And now we're going to move on to the death notices. And following the usual announcements, we will have the Hampshire Chronicle's obituary of Sir David Frost. The death notices then. Alan, Eric Royston Allen, Roy, peacefully at home on the 1st of September.
Farmer, George Edward Farmer, peacefully on the 26th of August, aged 85.
Hall, Eric Hall, Jim, 27th of August, aged 93.
Hargreaves, Avril, suddenly, 27th of August, aged 81.
Rance, Arthur William Rance, peacefully on the 21st of August, aged 98.
Turnbull, Barbara Rita Turnbull, peacefully on the 15th of August, aged 91.
Wood, Anne Wood, peacefully 28th of August, aged 55.
Thank you. And Robin will now read for us Sir David Frost's obituary.
Peerless broadcaster who made Hampshire his home. Tributes have been paid this week to broadcaster Sir David Frost, who died aged 74, just hours after setting sail on a cruise ship from Southampton. The veteran TV star suffered a heart attack on board Queen Elizabeth, which left for Lisbon in Portugal on Saturday. Sir David, whose children went to school in Winchester, was due to give a talk on board, having often appeared as a guest speaker on Cunard vessels. But he collapsed and died hours after the ship set sail, sparking tributes locally and from across the globe. Internationally acclaimed for his interview with former US President Richard Nixon, the broadcaster lived in Michelmarsh near Romsey for many years before selling his estate and moving away from Hampshire just months ago. His three boys attended the Pilgrims' School, the private boys' prep school in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. In 2009, the satirist and broadcaster was awarded an honorary doctorate at the University of Winchester. A spokesman for Peter Simmons College, Winchester, was among those who paid tribute. Sir David agreed to be interviewed for Seven Radio, the sixth form college radio station, after receiving his honorary degree. But the veteran star turned the tables and interviewed students James Borrett, station manager, and Callum Neary, head of radio. Demel Zahili, PR assistant at Peter Simmons, said, "They were interviewing Sir David, but then he grabbed the microphone and said he was going to interview them. They were mesmerised. It was priceless." She added, "He was a lovely man. Both he and Jack D, who went to Peter Simmons, were very generous with their time." TV personality Esther Ranson, who lives in the New Forest, also paid tribute, saying, "I think fellow interviewers have always been awestruck by his capacity to elicit memorable, sometimes historically significant quotes from all the movers and shakers of our time. but for all those who had pleasure in knowing him socially, it is his kindness, generosity, loyalty and humour that we will miss so much. Lee Peck, who runs an advertising agency in Southampton, said he had been inspired by David Frost and had the chance to work with him on a bid for the Coast FM radio station. He inspired me to get into TV, and I was able to tell him and shake his hand. As chairman of the Coast Board, he started the inaugural board meeting at the Rose Bowl by saying, "Hello, good evening and welcome." The Daily Echo, the Hampshire Chronicle's sister paper, interviewed Sir David when he received his knighthood in 1992. At the time, he had been modest about receiving one of the highest accolades from the Queen, saying he had never expected to be cast as a Knight of the Realm. In a separate interview, Sir David said his second favourite football team was Southampton, and he was part of a consortium with close friend Gavin Davis to take over the club in 1996. He said, "I'm a supporter of Arsenal, but my second team is Southampton. I really do love the area." And the article is illustrated by four photographs. One as an iconic image showing David Frost interviewing the disgraced former President Richard Nixon. Another shows Sir David on the air in 1983. And a third shows that he is discussing the rights and wrongs of gravel extraction in the Test Valley with former Master of the Rolls, Lord Denning. And then a large photograph shows the Biter's Bit, a begowned and capped Sir David Frost interviewing Peter Simmons students James Borrett and Callum Neary after Winchester had conferred an honorary doctorate on him.
Thanks, Robin. Well, that was indeed an affectionate obituary for Sir David Frost. He was a remarkable man. And on now to Christian comment from Claire, please.
This is headed Breaking the Cycle of Revenge and Retaliation and is written by Mary Gray. Last week, on August the 28th, the world remembered that half a century ago, in 1963, the great peace activist Dr. Martin Luther King stood on the steps of Washington's Lincoln Memorial before 250,000 marchers and delivered a prophetic speech. "I have a dream," he cried. It was an iconic moment. The power and passion of this speech marked for all time when the issue of civil rights came into focus. It spoke to the hope of justice for black Americans in the days of segregation, when they lived separate lives from white Americans. "I have a dream," he cried, "that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." His words transcended the racial issues of that day or any other. His dream of freedom, equality, and justice is the same dream of any race or ethnicity at any point in time. But that was not only his only legacy. Martin Luther King left us a great inspiration in his method of nonviolence, for he was influenced by Gandhi's ideas of peacemaking. He taught an ethic of nonviolent resistance, a strategy of hope and transformation, which can still help us now in the crisis we face. As our country is caught up in the Middle East conflict, and is in the midst of deciding what response, if any, should be made to the tragedy of chemical weapons in Syria, Martin Luther King would surely urge us to actively live out Jesus' teaching from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5. you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. In resisting the urge to repay vengeance with vengeance, we break the cycle of revenge and retaliation. Dr. King's personal prayer remains an inspiration today. Thou eternal God, we humbly confess that we have not loved thee with our hearts, souls, and minds, and we have not loved our neighbours as Christ loved us. We often give in order to receive. We love our friends and hate our enemies. We go the first mile, but dare not travel the second. We forgive, but dare not forget. And so, as we look within ourselves, we are confronted with the appalling fact that the history of our lives is the history of an eternal revolt against you. But thou, O God, have mercy upon us. Forgive us for what we could have been, but failed to be. And that was written by Mary Gray.
Thank you, Claire. We have six letters to the editor today, and Jerry has the first, please.
And it is entitled Pat on the Back for Wildlife Trust, and comes from John Seeger Green. It is my belief that the record for generating the longest spell of laughter in the House of Commons is held by the late Dr. Reginald Bennett, then the MP for Fareham and Gosport. The House was debating the problem of raw sewage being pumped into the sea, and Bennett suggested his constituents were unable to swim in Stokes Bay and merely went through the motions. A similar situation was developing on the wooded walk between St. Cross Mill and St. Cross beside the mill stream, with cattle continuing to roam there, particularly as it gets darker. However, it appears Hampshire Wildlife Trust have reconsidered the matter and are erecting an electric fence to keep the cattle in the field. It is not permanent, such as the one they cleared away, but hopefully it will prove effective, and in time, bovine excreta will no longer be an obstacle to pedestrians. John Seeger Green, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
Close calls with the Surveillance Society. This comes from Frank Williams of Old Morstead Road, Winchester. The Cloisters shop in the King's Walk, which raises funds for Winchester Cathedral, has a notice in the fitting cubicle warning potential shoplifters that God is watching them. In contrast, I see bright yellow signs have appeared in the cathedral close, informing us CCTV cameras are operating. Is it not shameful that the tentacles of the Surveillance Society have extended themselves to consecrated ground? It could be argued that faith suffered a terminal shock when the cathedral was fitted with a lightning conductor, that hope flew out of the stained glass windows when locks were fitted to the doors, and that charity was banished when a compulsory admission charge was imposed. But now the Divine Father himself seems to have been usurped by Big Brother when it comes to monitoring the sins of the populace. Old Nick must surely be dancing with glee. Frank Williams, Old Morstead Road, Winchester.
This letter from Vera Bruti is headed A Special Entrance into Winchester. Last week I went to Bristol, leaving Winchester along Andover Road to the west of Barton Farm. It was mid-morning, bright and sunny, and the small amount of traffic gave me the opportunity to really appreciate what a stunning road it is, lined with trees and with views across farmland. It was the same returning that evening, coming into the city along a green avenue. Worthy Road forms the eastern boundary of Barton Farm, and that too is tree-lined. So there is every reason for those approaching from the north or the northeast also to appreciate how special the entrance to Winchester is either side of Barton Farm. The City Council tells us the old Andover Road will still be a green avenue for pedestrians and cyclists, but I have my doubts. Who will care for it when the other foot and cycle paths are so neglected? Worthy Road has always had something else to be envied, a designated path for cyclists and pedestrians. I have used it many times and always prefer not to be on the road among all the traffic. Now it seems safer to use the road. The path is not wide enough for cyclists to pass when one is going fast downhill and the other much slower uphill, more obvious now because of the increased number of people on bikes. Another hurdle at the end of the journey, weeds and plants, especially stinging nettles growing over the footpath. This means there are two alternatives. Cycle straight through them and risk being stung, or move to the edge of the path and risk falling into the road. Will the pedestrianised Andover Road be kept any better? Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Winchester.
Winchester 71 Festival Recalled by Phil Yates. The recent article on the Winchester 71 Festival in the Looking Back column brought back memories for me, as I was commissioned by Douglas Bylett, Secretary of Winchester Chamber of Commerce, to take a cine film of all events. I made several films with my Super 8 camera with edited sound on locations throughout the country, including London, York, and of course Winchester, as well as different countries while cruising on Canberra, QE2, and the old Oriana. My brief was to attend as many functions as possible and shoot away. The result was screened in the John Stripe Theatre, now part of the University of Winchester, and at other venues in the area. I particularly recall filming the start of the carnival at Peninsula Barracks. I got permission to film from a high window in the main barrack block, now possibly someone's lounge or bedroom in the converted luxury apartments. In the winter, I visited clubs and old folks' homes, showing a range of films on the good old reliable Kodak projector. The programme would last an hour, with no break for ice creams. Happy days. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Gary Allam of Byton, near Alsford, and has the title One More Nail in My Village's Coffin. Our village is in terminal decline. It started 70 years ago with the closure of the school. By the 1980s, we had lost our shop, quickly followed by the post office. Farm cottages have been sold off to those with greater incomes than your average worker, whilst other, more modern cottages are demolished and replaced by more aesthetically pleasing dwellings that will undoubtedly be filled with yet more of the wealthy. So, that leaves the village hall and the Three Horseshoes pub, or should I say, the English Partridge at Byton, which, as I understand it, is to become more of a restaurant than a local. Not content with taking away yet another amenity, it seems not even the ancient name is sacred. This almost certainly, from the early 17th century, probably originates from when the Wither family bought Byton Manor in the late 1500s. Their coat of arms had three crescents, which it is thought was interpreted by the locals as horseshoes. In any case, the pub was known as the Three Horseshoes by the mid-1700s. One can understand a change of name, as the pub had long been in decline and was far from its 1970s heyday when it was packed every night and often until the early hours of the next morning. Some recognition of its old name in the new would have been good, but that's progress. So that just leaves the hall, and I do wonder how long before it is built on, and church, probably to be renamed St. Wonga's. Gary Allam, Woodlark Cottages, Byton, Alsford.
Scarlett Sotteris of Church Close, Southampton, writes about how banks invest in dirty fossil fuels. Dirty fossil fuel projects, from open-pit coal mines in Colombia to oil drilling in Nigeria, are polluting people's land and water and driving climate change, using our money. Most Britons entrust big banks and pension funds with their cash, but we have little say over how they invest it. Billions of pounds are going into fossil fuels, exactly when we need to wean the world off coal, oil and gas, to prevent catastrophic climate change. I'm taking part in a campaign by the World Development Movement, calling on the government to make banks and pension funds own up to the carbon emissions from the dirty energy projects they finance. Fossil fuels destroy lives and jeopardise our future, and we need to stop the finance sector throwing money at them. Scarlett Sotteris.
Thank you very much. And if you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring 01962 860 836. Again, that number, 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also do the good old-fashioned writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. And we're moving on now to historical items, and I'll start the ball rolling with 200 years ago, September the 5th, 1813. Bastille remains so horrible to see. That part of Paris where the Bastille stood is now a large manufactory, but there are still some indistinct remains of this abominable building, consisting of a round turret and a moat, so horrible to look at, with its sepulchral excavations, as to rouse imagination to paint it as if still the theatre of chains and dungeons, of perpetual darkness, of living misery, and of unwitnessed death. And the second 200-year-old item? The peace with France has occasioned, we understand, a considerable increase in the demand for fine fancy muslin, which sells readily at an advance of price. The goods made in France cost a great deal more than ours, and if there was a commercial treaty which provided for low duties, we should doubtless export, at least for some years, many of our finer manufactures.
100 years ago, September the 6th, 1913. Bishop's car collides with bus. The Bishop of Winchester was involved in a motor accident at Shotter Mill on Tuesday afternoon, but we are glad to state that beyond receiving a shaking, his lordship sustained no injury. The car, which was being driven by the bishop's son, Mr. Gilbert Talbot, was travelling towards Haslemere, and on coming round a bend in the road, came suddenly upon a motor bus, which is at a standstill. Mr. Talbot was unable to pass the bus, and applied the brakes at once, which, however, due to the slippery state of the road, failed to act, with the result that the car struck the motor bus with considerable force. And the next item. Sir, I was glad to see that in your last issue, EW is calling attention to the iniquitous practice of snaring wild birds. Like many citizens of Winchester, I have, during August, been availing myself of the use of the college boats. But my pleasure in doing so has been entirely destroyed by the sight of the bird catching which goes on in the meadows near the river. Apparently, the only way to put a stop to this kind of thing, in the present state of the law, is for landowners to forbid the setting of snares of any description upon their property. But the sooner the law relates to the capture of wild birds is amended, the better.
50 years ago, September the 7th, 1963. Heyday of cattle showing is over. When Fareham's 60th Agricultural Show and Gymkhana took place at Cam's Alders on Saturday, it was the fourth year running that cattle classes had to be cancelled through lack of support. Mr. Stuart Wyatt, secretary of the Fareham and Hants Farmers Club, blamed the mechanisation of dairies and commented, "I don't think we shall ever succeed in bringing cattle back to this show again." Mr. Wyatt explained that farmers could not be expected to show cattle due to the complete alteration in the system of running dairies. The modern dairy is run on a commercial basis and is totally mechanised, so manpower relative to the number of cattle is much lower than in the heyday of showing, he said. Hopes that the 1963 Romsey show would be the biggest and best faded dismally on Wednesday, when continual rain in the morning turned the grounds of Broadlands Park into a quagmire. Despite the atrocious conditions, few classes were cancelled, and the jumping events took place on treacherously slippery turf. All day long, tractors were busily employed assisting vehicles stuck with mud up to their axles. One of the smallest crowds for many a year braved the elements to visit the show. One young lady waded barefoot through the ankle-deep mud.
25 years ago, September the 2nd, 1988. Amnesty for unlicensed guns. A firearms amnesty began yesterday in Hampshire, one of the most heavily armed counties in the country. Over the next month, people who hand in unlicensed weapons will not be prosecuted. Hampshire police, together with police forces throughout the country, are holding the amnesty before the introduction in October of the new Criminal Justice Act. Under the new act, the penalty for illegal possession of a gun or ammunition rises from 3 years' imprisonment to 5, with an unlimited fine. Over the last 10 years, the number of armed robberies in this country has doubled to more than 3,000 a year. And the second item? The set-aside regulations are now official, and arable farmers have just a few weeks to register their land and make application to enter the scheme with the Ministry of Agriculture. The closing date is the 30th of September. Whether or not a farmer wishes to apply for set-aside now or in the future, it is important that his cropping pattern for the base year, 1987 to 88, is registered by this date. If it is done later, independent evidence of the base year pattern will be required. A minimum of 20% of arable acreage is necessary to qualify for set-aside payments, but there is no top limit.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's historical items. The next item is the Hampshire Chronicle goes out to the public and questions on various issues. I think it's Syria this time. And Claire is going to give us your say.
We asked, did Parliament's vote against military intervention in Syria signal a shift in Britain's position on the world stage? Peter Sumbler, who's 22, a student of Sun Hill Crescent, Alsford, said, "The vote reflects all that went on in Iraq, although I do think there is an element of political point scoring too. I think people still like to think of us as quite important, though. Michaela Godley, who's 19, a corporate advisor of Winchester Road Chandler's Ford, said, "We should not be going to war in Syria. We have only just got out of Iraq and are still in Afghanistan. We cannot keep getting involved in that way." Hamish Wilson, who's 73 and retired, of Itchen Abbas, said, "I think it's a sign of inept political management, and, whether right or wrong, it does prove the strength of Parliament. But it's a big opportunity for us to do something in our own right for the refugees." Beth Scott, who's 20, a student of Hillside Road, Teg Down, said, "It's been overplayed. I don't think our place in the world stage was changed hugely, and we're not becoming a different country. But it's a good thing we're not intervening, and it proved the strength of the Commons."
Thank you, Claire. And the next item is editorial comment of the Hampshire Chronicle. And this time it's asking the question, wind power, is it worth the sacrifice? The Bullington Cross wind farm planning application north of Winchester has set countryside campaigners against the Green Lobby. Both sides claim to have the best interest of the environment at heart. The protesters include the hunting and shooting set, as well as farmers and villagers worried about 14 giant turbines on their doorstep. Feelings are running high, with more than 3,000 people putting pen to paper to have their say. Claims and counterclaims have been made about the effectiveness of wind farms, with Winchester Action on Climate Change claiming they are a safe, clean and renewable source of energy. But critics say they are ineffective and unreliable, although a good investment for power companies which milk government subsidies. Planners will have to get to grips with science to debunk any myths. Meanwhile, green groups don't do their cause any good by claiming the site is ideal, as it is next to a major road junction. It isn't. The turbines would be spread across farmland dotted with ancient woodland, largely unchanged for centuries. The key question is whether the electricity generated is worth the sacrifice in terms of damage to the rural landscape. And now we have First Person, which is by Khalid Aziz, and Robin's reading it for us, please.
And this week it has the title, "So Moving, This Eclectic Coming Together of Beliefs." To the Austrian Alps for a wedding with a difference. My cousin was marrying a bride he met on the internet, apparently declaring from first clapping eyes on her photo that she was the one for him. Not surprising, really, as he is an IT geek holding down a high-powered job in Munich. She is from Nuremberg, an hour and a half away. He's from Pakistan. She's German. He a born Muslim turned Buddhist. She a Catholic. His parents, although staunch Pakistanis now living in the US, had long ago given up Islam. My aunt, as principled as you get, was a nuclear physicist and a Churchill scholar to boot. She turned her back on nuclear physics when Pakistan went for the atom bomb, wanting no part of such calumny. My uncle, a gentle soul given to accompanying himself on the harmonium as he sings Indian classical songs, was GP to the diplomatic community in Islamabad. He believes in the healing power of music and would offer, in addition to conventional allopathic remedies, a cooling rag to those with a fever. My cousin's sister is an observant Muslim, and her daughter, 24, has just opted to adopt the hijab. So what form of ceremony would be in order for such an eclectic coming together of beliefs? My cousin and his bride, having taken the precaution of a state ceremony in Germany on the Friday to make sure everything was legal, opted for what can only be described as a Hindu ceremony with Buddhist overtones. And what a remarkable ceremony it was. Fire was involved, as was the sprinkling of rice and lentils. Fertility probably a factor here. But there was a real symbolism involved in the milestone ritual. First, my cousin, dressed in the traditional and very elegant high-collared formal Pakistani chirvani, crushed underfoot a decorated box, symbolising how he would let no obstacle get in his way in his quest to marry the woman of his choice. Then the bride's father got in on the act. Firstly, in loudly acceding to the request to give his daughter away, and then in washing the feet of bride and groom to indicate the support of the family for this marriage. The incongruity of this elderly Bavarian kneeling at the feet of the future son-in-law was not lost on me. We have another wedding coming up next year, and I'm not sure I'll be rushing to wash my son-in-law's feet, or my daughter's for that matter. The high spot was the making of the seven vows, uttered by the stand-in pandit for the day in Sanskrit, then repeated in English by my cousin and responded to in German by his bride. Each vow was accompanied by the couple taking a step to cover seven different offerings. It was all very moving against a stunning alpine background. So many religious traditions coming together in harmony and celebration. Syria and the Middle East were thousands of miles away.
Thank you, Robin. How picturesque.
And Belgarum column this week. So Jerry has two or three items to read for us.
The first of which is entitled Claire Makes Happy Return to Her Roots. She's presented the Olympics and the Paralympics, but her latest gig might just have meant the most. National television treasure Claire Balding returned home to Hampshire on the recent bank holiday Monday to open St Mary's Church Fete in Kingsclere. The former amateur jockey grew up in the village before embarking on a successful television career, including presenting last year's hugely successful games in London. Entertainment was wildly different from her usual jobs, but who's to say the return of the Great Kingsclere Bake Off is not as exciting as an Usain Bolt dash or Mo Farah moment? Men of straw not scary anymore. Scarecrows are used to shoo away birds. Then they were adopted by horror movie makers to terrify. And now they are being designed to attract rather than repel. There are now a growing number of scarecrow festivals aimed at pulling in tourists. The Royal Geographical Society annual international conference in London heard last Wednesday. Dr. Paul Gilchrist of the University of Brighton said, "Rural communities are changing in terms of broadening their appeal to tourists and visitors by putting on things like scarecrow festivals. They say something about the community life and agricultural histories, which enable visitors to enjoy the villages and to spend money in them." It was a timely research, as Mitchell Dever is hosting its now annual scarecrow competition this weekend. And Byton Fate, near Alsford, is due to have a scarecrow competition for the first time this Sunday. And having earlier had an item about cow poo, I have great pleasure in now following with one about hedgehog poo. Winchester Cathedral has for centuries inspired celestial thoughts. But Councillor Martin Todd has been puzzling over more earthly matters. Animal dung in the Dean Garnier garden. Which species of animal had left the small jet-black droppings on the lawn next to the cathedral? He asked on his Twitter page. There were various suggestions in the online discussion that followed. A member of WINAC asked if Councillor Todd had a photo, as the Green campaign chart had a turd identification chart. The Liberal Democrat didn't have a photo, but a conclusion was reached nonetheless. Councillor Todd told Belgarum they were spiral-shaped, so not rabbits, and they didn't smell, so not foxes, and were jet black, so probably hedgehogs.
Thank you, Jerry. Well, I think that's a very fitting end to our regular features for this week. And we're moving on now to the general items of news, and Claire is going to start us off, please.
This is about the Countryfile calendar finds perfect setting. One of the county's grander estates featured on a popular television show on Sunday. Countryfile, aired at 7 p.m. on BBC One, was filmed at Hinton Ampner House near Alsford at the start of last month, August the 2nd, which opened its doors to the show's presenters and judging panel, John Craven, Joe Brand and Chris Packham, to select the winners of the photographic competition. Celebrating 25 years of broadcasting, the programme's competition saw over 55,000 entries, competing to win a place in the 2014 Countryfile calendar. This year's theme for the competition, which has been running for 13 years, was Our Living Landscape, pictures that capture the beauty of the British countryside and the life within it, from wildlife and plant life to shots of natural or rural scenery. Available later in the year, the calendar will feature the winning 12 photographs, as well as the library, marble hall and surrounding grounds of the quintessential English country house, which was shown on Sunday night's programme and will help raise money for children in need. And there's a picture of the three of them hard at work in one of the opulent rooms.
Lost building may be unearthed at hospital. Big Dig reveals past treasures as artefacts go on show. Winchester's Big Dig was opened to the public as the Winchester Archaeological Research Group revealed old treasures from below. Digging at the bowling green at St Cross Hospital since August the 22nd, the team hoped to unveil a lost building that may have become submerged over the centuries. It is believed that it could have been part of the original hospital founded by Henry of Blois in 1132. The Society, WAG, have previously dug at St Cross, discovering the building in 2009 from geophysical research, but it was not possible to excavate properly because it was under the bowling green, used for wedding receptions and other events. However, with full access to the site granted as a result of the hospital's current repair works to the church, WAG chairman Dick Selwood has spoken of the amateur digger's success. He said, "We had a continuous stream of over 800 visitors on Sunday. We really are very pleased. We are beginning to understand what the building is about. We think we found some evidence. In fact, half a 12th century doorway was recorded, but we thought all trace of Blois' buildings had disappeared." The dig has received support from the Heritage Lottery Fund and is taking place by permission of the Master and Trustees of the Hospital of St Cross. All finds will be recorded at the Historical Environment Record at Winchester City Council. Professor Martin Biddle, who led the extensive excavations in Winchester in the 1960s and 70s, said, "It is a highly interesting, enigmatic site that has much yet to teach us about the early hospital of St Cross. It is of far more than just local importance, and it's splendid to see proper archaeology. The dig at the oldest almshouse in the country is due to finish this Sunday, with volunteers needed to backfill the trench and help close down the site. And the piece is illustrated with a small diagram showing the layout of the hospital and two photographs, one showing the Archaeological Society's Big Dig Open Day with Eloise and Lily Hillier with their dad, James Hillier, and the second photograph shows Lily Hillier with Val Pegg.
Former city council leader dies in France. Rodney Sabine, former leader of Winchester City Council, has died suddenly, aged 66. Mr. Sabine lived in Alresford from 1990 to 2003 and was a tireless campaigner for the Liberal Democrats. He was chairman of the local party for Mark Oughton's famous two-vote election general election win in 1997 and the successful by-election, which was won by more than 20,000. He then, as election agent, ran Mr. Oughton's successful re-election campaign in 2001. Mr. Sabine was a city councillor for Alresford from 1994 to 2002, chairman of the planning committee from 1996 to 2001, and council leader 2001-2 before losing his seat. Mr. Sabine is believed to have been in hospital in France, recovering from a minor operation on his shoulder when he was taken ill and, despite medical attention, could not be saved. Former colleague, City Councillor Brian Collins, said he was a nice guy. One of his big loves was planning, and he enjoyed being chairman of the planning committee. He was always going all over the place and was very knowledgeable and thorough. As chairman of the party, the combination of him and Mark Oughton in the mid-90s was transformational. They were a very good team. A former head teacher and education consultant, Mr. Sabine moved to La Souterraine in France in 2003, a bustling town similar in size to Alresford, where he founded the English Library. An excellent French speaker, he became completely immersed in French life and even dabbled in local politics, standing unsuccessfully for the local commune. A lifelong steam train fanatic, he formed the North East Creuse Railway Group in France, travelling extensively on the network while campaigning against SNCF cuts. He leaves a sister, Tina, a daughter, Anna, son, James, two grandchildren, and his French fiancée, Christelle, whom he planned to marry this month in a ceremony to be carried out by the mayor of La Souterraine, with the whole town invited to the reception. A memorial service for Rodney will be held in the UK in October.
Riverside Restoration Plan. Rivers in Winchester city centre are getting an overhaul as part of a £170,000 project. The three-year initiative will see the walls repaired, while gravel and plants will be added to create a winding and aesthetically pleasing river corridor through Abbey Gardens in the Broadway. Winchester City Council and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust are pooling their efforts on the project, having commissioned specialist river restoration contractors Aquascience. Martin de Returto of the Wildlife Trust said, "We hope that this project will make the riverside areas of Winchester an even more interesting and attractive place to live and visit. The improvements are self-sustaining and will not increase the risk of flooding." Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Neighbourhoods and Environment, said, "This exciting project will help to make the very best of Winchester's waterways for wildlife and people, bringing the countryside into the town and linking the city to the wider landscape." Freshwater eel, brown trout and grayling have been spotted in river stretches previously completed in the district. The Abbey Gardens stretch follows similar improvements at Friarsgate, and an interpretive water vole trail is to be created with cash from the Heritage Lottery Fund. The trail will lead walkers from Abbey Gardens along the riverbanks to Winnall Moors Nature Reserve. A council spokesman said that work on the waterways at North Walls was in the programme for next spring. And there's a couple of pictures here. One of a water vole, quite a hairy one, making a comeback in the county. And also of Winchester City Councillor Jan Warwick with Martin de Ritterto of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust.
Also very hairy.
Romsey Food Festival. It will be bigger and even better next year. That's the promise of Romsey Food Festival organisers, who have hailed last Sunday's event as a huge success. Organiser of the New Look event, Peter Gale, said he was astonished at the festival turnout, which coincided with a Hampshire farmers' market in the town. There were culinary demonstrations across the town, drawing in crowds, catching the aromas of food being cooked by chefs from Romsey's White Horse Hotel, the Three Tuns Pub, and the Limewood Hotel at Lyndhurst. Mr. Gale believes the committee dished up the perfect recipe for festival goers in a revamp of the event, which has been going since 2009 and was until this year organised by Romsey Town Centre's manager Christine Cole, who has just retired. We had thousands of people attend what will definitely be the first of many Romsey food festivals organised by the committee. As a committee, doing our first festival has been a great experience, and we know that we are doing that. We know what we are doing for next year to make it bigger and better, said Mr. Gale. He added that the weather was perfect and festival attendees had remarked on how good the event was. I've never seen Romsey High Street, the 100, so busy, was just one of the numerous favourable comments received after the food festival, said Mr. Gale, who pointed out that children's entertainment included a juggling act. I know all the children enjoyed juggling Jake and the entertainment from plate spinning to trapeze walking. Face painting went down very well, with many different types of animal faces leaving the festival at the end of the day, added Mr. Gale. Besides the cookery demos, the festival included numerous food-related stalls, the Hampshire-based mobile petting farm Kids Roam, and musicians entertaining the crowds at venues round the town. And there are four photographs illustrating the article, one of crowds in the 100 enjoying the festival, and three of cookery displays by various people, and looking and smiling at the camera and looking as though they are really enjoying themselves.
Hypocrisy jibe as UKIP members use free Hampshire County Council car park. UKIP councillors have been accused of hypocrisy after parking at the County Council headquarters in Winchester, despite objecting to parking perks for elected members. The local authority provides free parking for councillors in the basement of Tower Street car park behind the council offices. But newly elected UKIP councillors have annoyed the established parties by claiming councillors should pay to park like everyone else, or take the train. Leader of the Lib Dem opposition group, Councillor Keith House, said UKIP were making a fuss about councillors parking for free at council meetings. Yet at the very first full council meeting in May, what did we have but a car spray-painted in UKIP colours and logo parked in the same car park? Hypocrisy? Oh, surely not. Councillor Ray Finch, leader of the 10-strong UKIP group, admitted he and his colleagues had parked in the free car park, but denied they were being hypocritical. What is the point of leaving the parking spaces empty? I would rather contribute towards it. We want councillors to pay, and there should be ticket machines just like everywhere else.
we should not get these perks. Councillor Finch added UKIP had made a collective decision not to claim petrol expenses for travelling to council meetings. We get paid allowances for doing the job. That is our place of work.
Raise a glass to country's top landlord. When it comes to running a pub, there's not a better host in the country than Hampshire's Tim Gray. Tim can today toast himself after being named 2014 Landlord of the Year. The 45-year-old runs the Yew Tree in Lower Weald. He won the same award in 2010 and said he was thrilled to be recognised again. To win it once was fantastic, but to win it a second time is an unbelievable honour. It's something you are awarded rather than enter, and it says a lot about the hard work of the whole team here. There's only a dozen or so of us, but we are all part of the chain and have all contributed to this. And the support of my family has been great, as they have to put up with me working all the time. He added that the pub stood out because of the staff's hard work, maintaining high standards, something he learned from his mentors, Graham Jameson, the late and much lamented landlord of Winchester's famed Wickham Arms from 1984 to 1998, who himself won a whole raft of awards, and Richard Crawford, still the friendly face behind the bar at another hugely popular pub, The Plough at Sparsholt. Published annually, the 2014 guide was full of praise for Mr. Gray and said, "Tim Gray at his yew tree in Lower Weald, so hard-working, so ever-present and so consistently cheerful, is Landlord of the Year 2014. Unfailingly good service from the enthusiastic and charming landlord and his helpful staff, fair prices for the interesting ales and top quality food, and an easygoing, friendly atmosphere all contribute to our readers' enjoyment of this smashing little pub. It is compiled through feedback from 2,000 correspondents, reinforced by editors' inspections." And there's a picture of a very happy Tim Gray, surrounded by his staff, all beaming happily.
Unearthing Churchill's top secret weapon. They were to be Churchill's top secret and last ditch weapon. Now, after more than 70 years, a Hampshire man is spearheading the project to reveal the hidden secrets behind the British resistance. And the search has revealed several operational bases in the Winchester area. Known at the time as auxiliary units, they were made up of civilian volunteers whose work was considered too important for them to be called up to the regular forces. Having signed the Official Secrets Act, they told no one of their involvement. They would have disappeared as the invading German armies approached, only reappearing at night to sabotage Nazi efforts and deal with collaborators. Researchers know that there were patrols in Eastleigh, Soberton, Droxford and Bishop's Waltham. But the problem for Tom Sykes, founder of the Coles Hill Auxiliary Research Team, CART, is that it seems that they were all a bit too good for their job. And have generally remained silent. The important thing to remember is that this was a suicide mission, said Mr. Sykes. These guys, when they signed the Official Secrets Act, were not military men, yet they were signing away their lives. If we had been invaded sooner or later, they would have been smoked out. Asking a man to go into a bunker and sit there and then come out and cause as much damage and sabotage as possible, and then return to the bunker and know that sooner or later you're going to be killed, That, to me, is a story that needs to be told. Some of the men's families were being sent white feathers when all this... when all the while they were training for this, but they could not say anything. CART researchers have also been making important discoveries about the special duties branch. Also made of local volunteers, their role was to gather information about German troop movements and aeroplanes in the event of an invasion, before passing it on to the defending forces. Mr. Sykes says he knows of at least one radio bunker in Winchester, but says the owner of the property does not want the location to be made public. There were also outstations at Wickham and Denmead. CART was also involved in successfully lobbying the Royal British Legion for the remaining auxiliary veterans to march past the cenotaph in November as part of the Remembrance Sunday parade. It is the first official recognition they have received. They are appealing for anybody with any knowledge of or involvement with the auxiliaries or the special duties branch to come forward. These men have the opportunity to march at Whitehall, and yet they have to come forward to us, added Mr. Sykes. If you are involved in any of the units mentioned, you can contact CART on 0872 045 9940. I'll repeat that. 0872 045 9940. And the article is illustrated with a rarely seen photograph of Wasatch Auxiliary, one of the many stationed across Hampshire during the Second World War.
Sugar-free cakes could be a sweet idea for business. A Winchester businesswoman hopes to be the first successful developer of sugar-free cakes. Luba Bortnick of Cannon Street created Sands Bakery soon after finding out her partner's mother was unable to eat sugar. Barbara Richardson of Headbourne Worthy had not eaten cakes for over a decade after eating too much as a child, until Luba started making her sugar, wheat and gluten-free products. Barbara said, "She did it for me. I haven't eaten cakes for 10 years, and now I eat it all without worrying about it. I ate the first one with fear and trepidation, but it was lovely." Within a week of starting, Luba set up a high street market stall promoting locally sourced and natural ingredients and a sugar substitute extracted from vegetables called xylitol. Born in the Ukraine and raised in Greece before coming to the UK 10 years ago, Luba describes her cakes as sweet without sin, offering savoury alternatives with recipes such as rosemary and thyme. After studying business management at Royal Holloway University, she met partner Charlie Lambert at a New Year's Eve party in Oxford nearly 2 years ago and was soon introduced to his mother. Currently cooking everything in her own kitchen and setting up her website, Liuba said Sans Goods will be available to order online shortly, but she preferred to be a permanent feature at the heart of the market, hoping her two-week trial proves successful. "I would love to keep a stall," she said. "I think it's great to keep close to people. The only thing I can't leave out is the dairy." Liuba will be baking a big cake for a raffle being held mid-September to raise money for a young girl suffering from Ewing sarcoma, a rare type of bone cancer. And there is indeed a photograph of Liuba and Barbara Richardson holding baskets of delicious-looking cakes.
I've got another water vole story. This one is headed MP's Joy as Ratty Returns to the Rivers of Hampshire. Mearne Valley MP George Hollingbury is asking landowners and householders to help a project which has reintroduced the water vole to the River Mearne. Mr. Hollingbury, a keen angler, went to Titchfield Haven National Nature Reserve to learn about initiative helping the much-loved creature, which has had a hard time in recent years due to habitat loss and predation by American mink. Some estimates suggest there has been a 95% decline in numbers since 1960, from around 8 million to 350,000. One key to their success is having the right cover on the riverbank, with lush vegetation of reed beds the best. And Mr. Hollingbury is asking landowners and those with gardens that run along the river to ensure that such areas are encouraged. Hundreds of voles have been freed in Titchfield, with reports of some travelling as far as 2 miles up the River Mearn in as little as 6 weeks, as the Nature Reserve has been using DNA testing to help track their spread. There are further releases planned which should see the mammals, made famous as Ratty in The Wind and the Willows by Kenneth Graham, populating the whole of the river soon. I recall marvelling at seeing my first ever water vole when out fishing, and I've been rather fond of them ever since, said Mr. Hollingbury. So it's a good news story that they are back up and running in the River Mearn, and fascinating how quickly they can repopulate an area if given the chance. But water voles do need the help of humans, particularly with good covered habitat like reed beds or vegetation on the river bank. So I hope landowners and gardeners up and down the Mearn Valley will do all they can to help this fantastic project. As a fisherman, I have to say it really does make my day if I see a water vole going about its business and nibbling on plants, and great that many other people will now get that chance. I wish Titchfield Haven Nature Reserve the very best with this superb project, and I'm sure many people will be pleased to see these creatures return to the Mearn and Hampshire. Winnell Moors Reserve, run by the County Wildlife Trust on the edge of Winchester, is also seeing a steady rise in the number of voles. And there's a picture here of George Hollingbury and Countryside Ranger Nick Schofield, Councillor Jeff Hockley and local student Tom Miller at the water vole release site.
Double boost for penguins. Members of Winchester City Penguin Swimming Club have welcomed the appointment of a new chief aquatics officer at the start of the season. Glenn Shepherd, a former performance analyst for the first team at Chelsea Football Club, will provide leadership to a club which has seen significant growth in recent years. As one of Winchester's largest community sports clubs, WCPSC provides membership for over 900 swimmers, with a further 200 on the waiting list. Not only will Shepherd's strong background in sports science be a valuable input to improving the Penguins' performance on the national stage, he will be working to secure more pool time and better facilities for a club already at capacity and wanting to expand its community provision. Shepherd's appointment follows news that the WCPSC was one of only three British clubs nominated by the Amateur Swimming Association for the 2013 Community Sport and Recreation Awards. The club went on to scoop a highly commended in the volunteer management category. In a statement, the ASA congratulated Winchester City Penguins for their recognition and also thanked each and every volunteer for their dedication and commitment to the sport. Club Chair Sue Faulkner, who will be stepping down from her voluntary position at the next AGM, said, "I'm very proud of the achievements of the club over the last few years, and I'm delighted to welcome Glenn to the team. Post-Olympics, it is essential that we invest in the legacy, and Glenn's appointment recognises the value of sport in the community."
Dentist will have 30,000 patients. A Hampshire man is swapping Eastleigh for East Africa. Dr. Peter Saund, a dental surgeon in Boyotwood, Eastleigh, is Kenya-bound on a mission to train a doctor to carry out basic dentistry. He will be spending 10 days in Kibera, Africa's largest slum, just outside Nairobi, providing a free outreach service to locals. He said, "The situation is dire out there, and people have to live with conditions we would never have to put up with. I just wanted to contribute in some way, and I researched it and came across this charity called Wings of Mercy." Dr. Saund, a widowed father of two, will be flying out in October and says his family and patients have been very supportive. He will be part of a team comprising five doctors, four nurses, a midwife assistant, and four support workers. He is aiming to raise £1,000 beforehand in order to buy medical instruments that he can leave there. The conditions will be a far cry from his usual workplace, where Dr. Saund looks after around 2,000 patients. In Kibera, the doctor is looking after more than 30,000. Although the very basic room in which dentistry is carried out has electricity, water is only available through the tap for only a few hours per day, if at all. There is also a very high rate of HIV there, and tools are primitive and sterilised in a pressure cooker over a coal fire, Dr. Saund said. And if you want to help Dr. Saund, you can do so online by visiting justgiving, that's all one word, justgiving.com/Peter Saund. Again, all one word, Peter Saund.
Boomtown Festival rocked by new salvo of criticism. More criticism has been heaped on a Winchester music festival where a young woman died. The Boomtown Fair is being investigated by Winchester City Council over alleged breaches of licence conditions, including excessive noise and music after a 4 a.m. curfew. As reported in last week's Chronicle, organisers defended the August festival, which took place at the Matterley Estate, and said they worked closely with council officers to avoid noise problems. But Tichborne Parish Council disputes that claim and said it still had major concerns over noise. In a statement, Chairman Peter Kilminster said, "Tichborne Parish Council would like to express its disappointment with the staging of the recent Boomtown 2013 event. As was the case last year, the event seems to have been staged with scant regard for the interests of the local communities and the licensing laws. We believe that hosting such an event appears contrary to the core purposes of the South Downs National Park." He added, "The inability to manage an event such as this is, in our view, totally unacceptable. This is especially so as this is not the first time such events have been staged here. We believe the organisers and the landowner should have learnt from their past inadequacies. If the event cannot be managed properly, it should not be permitted at all, as it not only involves considerable inconvenience, but is also a danger to life." The Parish Council also called for an independent investigation of the event, particularly looking at management issues. Meanwhile, organisers moved to exclude press from a meeting on Thursday, that was 29th of August, between residents, police and councillors. But it is understood that safety concerns were raised over arrangements for picking people up from the festival. Chris Sparks of the A31 Residents Liaison Group said, "We did say there were a lot of pedestrians this year on the road. Next year they're going to have a designated pickup point." Osbury Parish Council Clerk Michael Cleary said no one from his council attended. "We didn't attend simply because we couldn't get anyone there, but there are some councillors who are concerned about it," he said. Festival bosses said they invested significant amounts in soundproofing, and council officers say noise complaints were down 90% this year, from 70 to just 8. The City Council has still not decided whether to prosecute over the alleged breaches, but confirmed plans for the 2014 Boomtown Fair were already underway. A 21-year-old man and a 19-year-old woman, both from Somerset, were arrested in connection with the death of 18-year-old Eleanor Rowe of Glastonbury, Somerset, on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of a Class C drug. The pair have been bailed until October the 8th.
Barometer shows high street prospects are up. Business prospects in Winchester are on the up, according to a new survey. Winchester Business Improvement District's business barometer has shown a slight improvement in optimism for the future. When asked about their trading prospects for the next 6 months on a scale of 1 to 10, the median score of 46 replies was 6, which is up 1 point from last year. Median takings are up 2% on last year, while employment levels remain stable. The survey also showed there are currently 8 vacant units on the high street out of 129, a rate of 6.2%. It comes as e-commerce experts are calling for high streets to embrace change and expand their online and mobile sales. Several businesses have gone from Winchester, including Jessop's, Clinton Cards and JJB Sports. And Dan Wagner, Chief Executive of Power Technologies, said there should be more emphasis on bringing a personal experience to digital shopping. He said, "We are seeing a major shift in the way we shop. Gone are the days when we walk around shops picking items up, carrying them, queuing up at a till, packing them all away again so that you can carry them around with you all day. New shopping models involve convenient delivery and collection methods, more enjoyable methods of browsing, and quick means of payment. We shouldn't be anticipating the loss of the high street. We should be anticipating its evolution. Power has implemented payment platforms for major brands such as Tesco, Superdrug and Laura Ashley."
Thank you very much. That concludes all the general news items for this week. You may have detected a faint theme about aquatic creatures. I wonder how many of you were fooled by when we had an item about penguins. We thought it was going to be an animal and not a human swimmer. We'll have a reminder again that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 862 826. And we thank our editors, Christine and Fredina, and we also thank the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you also to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.